I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest is Politics.
Anish Kumar here from Podsafe the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Yeah, ladies, see? Oh, hello, everybody. Welcome. We are live with George Giant Slayer. We're going to be talking about the end of woke and Harry and Meghan. We're going to be showing clips from George's documentary, Woke is Dead. This is the funeral. Watch the eulogy. And, you know, with Trump coming in and signing the executive orders and reversing a lot of this stuff, it's especially pertinent right now, isn't it? And how long has this project been in the works for you, George? And huge thank you for coming back, my friend.
Oh, always a pleasure. Always great to see you. Always. I've been working on it for 3.5 years. I've poured myself into it. I was just waiting for the election to see, what was going to happen. But, spent a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to put it together. Kind of like documenting the crazy as it happened.
Did you have a time frame on when you calculated that the pendulum would start to swing the other way, or were you just anticipating it would eventually?
Well, no, like everything, history's a cycle. So I was like, I started to see the swings happening when Hollywood studios, because you know I always follow that, when the Hollywood studios began to take notice, and when they started attacking YouTubers and critics, and they were like, you're like, okay, if they were all powerful, they wouldn't be sitting here. What the heck? Something has gone wrong with my camera. My apologies. When
we can hear you fine.
Okay, great. When the studios started to attack reviewers, movie critics, people with their own independent thoughts, I was like, okay, this is where it's beginning to swing. Of course, it took several years, and we still have a long way to go to finally bury woke, which is why I wrote it. Because you're always going to have, kind of like after World War II, you still had Japanese fighters isolated on islands who are carrying on the work of the emperor. They're like, no, we're going to fight till the end. We're still going to have kind of like those guerrillas of the ideology who are going to continue to battle for woke. So whenever you have an idea that enters into the world, I've always viewed like three basic things happen. It takes off and it becomes like the sun. Everybody embraces it and it shines brightly. It's good and positive. Or it's something dark like woke, and it darkens the skies. But third, once it's rejected, it's buried. So I'm like, we need to have kind of like an official funeral where everybody comes together. They rally together like a battle cry and go, this is done. Here's the funeral. We're burying it. Because anyone that comes after that and says, no, it's still here, they look like lunatics.
Right. That raises so many questions, George. Yeah. And I find this subject fascinating. How did it get so prevalent whereby our schools, our police, our government, they're all enforcing these laws that with hindsight, when Trump signed the executive order, some of it just seems it goes completely against common sense.
Oh, my
God. How did it get that extreme and that prevalent?
Well, I can just tell you just what happened 2 days ago in Colorado, and I'll answer the question. 2 days ago in Colorado, the Colorado legislature passed a bill that if you misgender your child, the state can take away your kid. Take away, snatch, grab, gone. Done. That's the woke insanity. And woke pretty much started, the original idea of woke started around the 50s, which was about equality. Good. Well, it started off as something good, but like everything else, it got hijacked. This modern rendition of woke is nothing more than an ideology that appealed, that was targeted to losers, to the lazy, to people who were broken. It's like I say in the video, woke, was given to every broken toy in the world. And they told them that you can feel normal if you go out and break the world. And think about how many people are lazy today. How many people don't want to work? How many people think that life should be easy? We've seen TikTok videos, Instagram reels, YouTube shorts where you hear somebody who's like, why do I have to work? I was listening to some of these videos as I was writing. They're like, why do I have to work? I'm 25 years old and I'm losing the majority of my life having to work from 9 to 5. And that's just to pay my bills. That's just to feed my face. How come? What kind of unjust society is this that someone is not paying for everything, feeding me so I can live my life? I'm like, that's who they went after. And they build up an army. But the problem is this common sense always rules. So it's been trying to kick crazy to the curb for a long time. And it's the fact that people who aren't plugged into the news on a daily basis or to social media, they were having to find out about it word through mouth. If it hadn't happened in their state, if they hadn't known someone that it occurred to, if their child hadn't been impacted, it had to hit them. And when it started happening in the pocketbook in this country, when woke ideologies really were embraced by the mainstream political establishment, the government, and that started impacting people's finances, where, you know, eggs here in certain states were costing $18 a dozen. People are like, wait, why is this happening? So then they start going down the rabbit hole and go, oh, I see. And that started waking people up. You started seeing more Hollywood movies becoming box office bombs, no matter how much money they spent, because people are like, look, I want to have these conversations with my child at a time when I'm ready to. I just want you to entertain me. Stick to storytelling. Don't give me lectures. And so it trickled out through there. Then you have the mainstream media, which is another monologue I'm writing about right now. It'll take me a little while, but about kind of like how we went from the news being a trusted source when it originally began to what it's become today, which is basically a commercial break for pharmaceutical ads and lobbyists. So that's pretty much where woke started. Appeal to losers, promise them that they'll feel special and be special as long as they break the world.
So with Trump signing these executive orders and stuff at the federal level, does that still mean that there's still a huge woke movement trying to counteract what Trump is trying to achieve? It's not just gone away overnight, has it? Is there a battle going on?
There is a battle going on, but it's primarily an AstroTurf battle. Like they had the April 5th, where it's like everybody, all these what I call rent-a-rioters went across the country in different states. And they're like, we're taking it, our nation back from Trump. How dare Trump and Musk, you know, try to clean out fraud and waste from the government? How dare they go after these embedded bureaucrats who have built their kingdoms over the last 20 years? But that's not how they sell it. They're like, keep your hands off of our health care, our Medicare, our Medicaid. They're like, wait a minute, nobody's touching that. They've said it a million times. They're just going after the fraud, the people who are on the rolls illegally, the people who are abusing it. So yeah, there is, but it's primarily funded. It's not what I would consider to be a natural movement, a grassroots movement that has grown up. Again, you got the kooks and the quacks. And then you have the NGOs, which have been starved of funds lately, which are supporting it with whatever they have left.
So what were your thoughts on USAID when it all came out about the various directions money was going to for USAID?
You mean like the $72,000 that went to Ireland so they could put on a play called DEI? Because there's nothing like DEI in song form, you know, or Vietnam or Ecuador were for trans surgeries and plays and theatrical musicals, or what was it? Was it Botswana or Thailand, where it was $7 million, where they spent money to train journalists how not to use, you know, non-binary, non-gendered language, you know, not to abuse it, to properly write their pieces. It's nuts. Again, but that's how they were able to build steam, spend all this money coming from USAID, which is basically a slush fund, and hook people up to it so their paychecks are connected to it, right? It's kind of like if you want to, because I love the UK, you know that. It's like my cousin's across the pond, I have family there. And so I wrote a little bit about it in the woke monologues. And now I'm, again, writing a third monologue about the United Kingdom because I want to help as much as I can. And I was looking at the National Health Service and I was like, how many people does it employ? I'm like, how could you ever look to reform it, you know, to make it the best it could possibly be, to weed out having issues with being able to provide proper medical care? And what I mean by that is there are many instances in when I've been researching at the NHS where people need dialysis treatment, but they almost take this line where they look at your age, they look at your possible lifespan, like, go out by, you don't fit yet, you get pushed to the back of the bus. And you're like, how would you reform that when there's, my last counting was 1.5 to 2 million employees? Like, since you've built a network that is going to fight to protect itself. That's the same thing Trump's doing. He's trying to unravel that. People who've built careers. There was a contract that went out for the Department of Education where a contractor, a consultant, was paid $1.5 million for 1 year just to count how many pieces of mail went to the Department of Education.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's insane stuff.
So could they have got away with this if it hadn't have gotten so extreme? Did the extremity sow the seeds of its own destruction?
It did, because they pushed it too far, too fast, too quickly. If they had slowed it down, it would have been much, much more dangerous. And they're still not giving it up. They're still not giving it up because, again, you have people's wallets are attached to it, their political power. It's like anything. It's like how many organizations exist today where their primary battle, charities, 501c3s, foundations, is to fight racism. They're saying systemic racism. There is no systemic racism in the United States of America. You have good people, you have bad people. And bad people you will never get rid of. They've been here since the beginning of time. They'll be here till the end of time. But is there a systemic racism in place? No. But those organizations, let's say once they won, once they achieved their goals, they didn't just go, okay, we're going to close up shop or let's target something else that needs to be corrected and fixed. They just continue to push their agenda, which means they can never allow there to be harmony or unity. Division is the only way they get dollars. And that happens across the board.
So is there a chance then, let's just hypothetically, the Democrats get in and they are as militant or woke as they have been previously, could it all just resume again?
It could. If everything that President Trump is saying does not come true, if half it, if the economy doesn't get fixed, if America's engine doesn't kick back up, obviously the Democrats will come back in and they will feel emboldened, especially after hating him and knowing that he won't be able to return. They will double down. But right in there, again, it will be their undoing. It's exactly what they did after Barack Obama when they had Joe Biden come in. They didn't do it slowly. They just shoved it right in your face, like Colorado, like I just mentioned at the top when we first started speaking, passing legislation that if you misgender your child, the state can take it away from you. That's not going to last long. People, I don't care how much support there is in the state for you. You're going to find a family who's going to be talking to their kid and going, son, you know, son, I don't agree with this. And you want to do what you do when you're an adult, you go for it. But you're under my house. It's my responsibility to build you a proper foundation to help you build a solid character. And when they lose their kid, that's going to kick off a firestorm. So, yeah, if the Democrats were able to get back in, which I don't think is going to happen after Trump is out of office, especially the way things are projected to go in the future, I think then it'll be official that it's done.
All right. So if you just tuned in, I'm here with George the Giant Slayer, and all of his links, including his YouTube channel, are in the description box, his website, Instagram, Twitter. Please support and follow his work. We're talking about the end of woke and Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. They're all going down, according to videos on George's channel. And if you've got any questions, put them in the chat. And the first question is from Fifi. I want to know how George Soros recruits his professional protesters and how much do they get paid?
The pay varies depending on reports. I'm not one of them, so I wouldn't know. But they usually find them through their NGOs, which used to get funded through USAID and through various slush funds and extra expenditures that would go to different government agencies. What they would do, I'll give you an example. The EPA, the new EPA administrator, had stopped $20 billion that had been assigned by Biden's staff out the door. It was put in an offshore bank account to fund hundreds of charities, non-governmental organizations. And they use that money then to hire people, push their agenda. That's pretty much how it happens. But basically what that means is that taxpayers were paying for their own destruction. It wasn't coming out of George Soros's pocket. George Soros used USAID like his bank account. Same thing for the Clintons, same thing for Bill Gates. Yes, they use some of their own money, but they primarily use the resources that the government has provided for them. And the same organizations for staff, for people power. Hey, look at these. You want to see a natural grassroots protest, meaning that people are upset and they come together. You can go back and look at the 60s. You go look at the old video. You had hippies running around. Some people painted a sign on their chest, some on a bulletin board, some on a shirt, some on a card. Here, anytime there's a protest, they all have the same poster board. They all have the same script, and you can see it online where you'll have like, oh, my God, media. Like, look, we just grabbed a hold of one of the scripts that someone decided to share with us, and it says, you know, say these lines. Elon Musk must go. Trump is bad. They're all repeating it. With, again, same hat. And that's funding. That's a mechanism. That's a machine that's been built. That's not natural and organic.
So Professor Hamamoto is in the chat, and he said, labor unions like SEIU provide bodies for staged demos.
Absolutely. He's correct. Except that is changing now, because what you have is the Services Employees International Union, because of the way Trump is doing the tariffs, are now, which shocks CNN and a lot of the Democrats and Democratic activists. They're like, wait a minute, you are now supporting the President of the United States, and that happens to be President Trump. They're like, well, he wants to bring jobs back to America. He wants to bring manufacturing back to America. Tariffs used to be a part of our country. I mean, they were founded on the fact that, look, what did the president say? He goes, my end goal is to have zero tariffs that are reciprocal with every country. So everyone can sell whatever they want to everyone. That's fair. You want to sell your cars here? Good. We want to sell our cars there too. That's good for us both. Whoever makes the best product and makes what people want, that's who wins. I think that's fair and balanced. And so you're having labor unions who've been ignored since basically the 90s, talking about 90,000 factories have closed since NAFTA was put into place. 15 to 22 million jobs have either been exported or onshored, where they had people come in from foreign countries and then replace the people here at half the price. So that's what he's trying to correct. And I think that's something that every country should do. When he says, like, America first, he's saying UK should have the same model. UK first, Italy first, Germany first. That way you take care of your citizens.
Yeah, it's tricky, and there's all kinds of debates about the tariffs in economics.
I'm sure.
Yeah, and even if you level the tax playing field, you get domestic governments subsidizing domestic companies, which makes it unfair, you know, from that angle as well. So, yeah, it's really complex. So, Tashelle is saying, with all of this dismantling and divide, how will Trump restructure the government for success?
Well, the first thing that he's trying to do is he's trying to get rid of what he calls the dead weight. Again, bureaucrats who've been there for years, who built up kingdoms and their little fiefdoms, and they're trying to enact, like, they're acting as if they were elected, pushing out agendas of their own, because they're like, look how bloated the government. So his first goal is, well, he wants to thin it down to make it as efficient as possible. Then he wants to restructure it by moving a big portion of Washington and the federal bureaucracy out into the country. He's like, okay. He says the Department of Education should not exist. It should be upon every state. You can apply the same money. He goes, why would you have a federal department running everything? When he goes, just take that money and divide it out into the states and let them run it, because that's local. Each state knows what's best for it, and each state, therefore, is represented by its people. They're going to elect the legislators and representatives they want, and when they don't do what they want, they're going to pull them out. So that's what he wants to do. It's the same way they're talking about the FBI, breaking it up and moving more people into all the field offices, the EPA, for the same thing. You should be in the places where they actually need you, not sitting on your butt in Washington. So those are the keys.
All right. We're now going to show you couple of minutes of George's video woke is dead, and get your perspective on it, viewers. And if you've got any more questions, put them in the chat. So I'm going to start this at 9:50 and end at 11:10, I think it was. There we go. So let us know in the chat what you think about this. George has spent years working on this, so it better be good.
Now, the reality is they only did this for one reason. So every broken toy in the world could feel normal by breaking the world. That's when the oppression industry celebrated its grand opening. They hung up new signs. Victims wanted, now hiring. Hate became the new economy. Victimhood, the new currency. Resentment, a new trust fund. And everyone was drafted into the war. That's when they turned around and told us that smoking was still bad for you. But weed was a superfood. Fat was healthy. And three Big Macs a day kept the doctor away, because big wasn't bad. It was just the beginning. Lizzo would become your new role model, because nothing says empowerment quite like diabetes in a thong. That's when mothers-to-be would be known as pregnant people, because women had become a slur. When tampons were marketed for men, because misgendering a prostate was a mortal sin. When PETA sued SeaWorld for practicing dolphin slavery, but everyone in Seattle called a six-month belly bump a clump of cells. That's when it all happened. When Victoria's Secret sadly swapped out their sexy angels for my next-door neighbor, and Playboy, the magazine I grew up with, sneaking peeks at behind my mother's back, now featured on its cover my girlfriend's dad in fishnets, proving once and for all the world had officially gone mad. That's when discrimination was rebranded as social.
Wow. Very well put together, my friend.
Yeah, I cataloged basically the last 10 years. Thank you for that, my friend. Yeah, I cataloged the last 10 years of woke and how it infected life, from education to the military to entertainment. I had a couple of people ask me, why did I focus on Hollywood? And I always explain this. It's one of the reasons I covered it in my channel. Same reason I cover Meghan and Harry. Because culture is the way we communicate. It's the bridge that we have with people. It's how we bond with one another. When we used to go into movie theaters, you have a room with 500 strangers all sharing the same emotional experience. That's what people would get excited about. They didn't realize, which, like, you're all here taking the same ride. And when you had movie studios starting to act like non-governmental organizations and start pushing their hands into education, into communities, propping up political messages and propaganda, it's like, I give an example here. It was right before the 9-minute mark. If I think you go to 8 minutes, it's an interesting message. I think it's right at 8 minutes.
And let me just tell the viewers, if you want to watch the whole thing, I've put the link in the live chat, and the link is also in the description box. It's on George's channel, and George's general channel link is also in the description box if you watch it on replay. And I'm going to go back to, what did you say, 8 minutes?
I think so. It'll start with Kathleen. It'll say, like, Hollywood. Yep, I should be right at it right there, I think.
All right.
Go. I'm doing Pappy Van Winkle.
Oh.
Because didn't you know? Peasants deserve bugs, not luxury bourbon. It was all done so identity politics could turn Target into a fetish store for kids and call it noble, so the mainstream media could kill Merry Christmas with Happy Holidays and declare mission complete. So Twitter could become a truck stop for the FBI and call it safety. So America's founding fathers could be posthumously charged at Nuremberg. Didn't you know? History must be judged by today's standards. That's the law according to woke. That's when virtue signaling took on a whole new meaning. Grifters wanted to empower themselves and help sell the lie some more. It was here done it so Leonardo DiCaprio could claim to be a climate crusader, all while jumping on his private jet and fleeing California's wildfires faster than he could change the diapers on his barely legal squeeze. So Hollywood could showcase 90-pound girls kicking 200-pound grown men's asses and call it feminism. So Kathleen Kennedy could invent the art of self-insertion and kill movies. And in the process, turn women into men into beta males, and transform every Mary Sue into an estrogen-deprived Karen looking for a hormone high by gaslighting the audience. Kennedy killed Star Wars with a message, buried Indiana Jones in a nursing home, and hung Willow on a cabbage patch tree, all to declare victory for Gloria Steinem. But what she didn't realize is the fact that she killed great storytelling. See, movies are modern bards. They mark every moment in time from our childhood to the grave. And Star Wars, like many other people, it was special to me. It was the first movie that I saw when my father was my legend, the hero that I loved. The first movie I saw before he kidnapped me at the age of 7 chained me in a basement, beat me marinating in his hate for my mom. And Empire Strikes Back was the first film I saw when I was rescued.
You might want to pause it here.
So from
okay.
Yeah, because it gets a little dirty. But yeah, that was pretty much it. It's storytelling is what marks our moments in time. There are memories, not just movies, because there are shared experience and they impact and they ripple throughout the culture.
So many questions then off the back of that. Talking about the parasites capitalizing on woke, these hypocrites jetting around the world, would you include Harry and Meghan in that category?
Oh, yeah. That first section actually starts with Harry and Meghan. I think it's it was all done so Harry and Meghan can play as for-profit philanthropists and flash their paid-for smiles. It's the whole thing. They go around. That's typically how woke embodies itself. They go around saying, you will, eat bugs while I'm going to eat my cheeseburger. You are going to have to walk there. I'm going to take my private jet. But make sure that you never pollute the planet. It's like Snow White. You've heard about the Snow White news with Rachel Zegler, right? Yesterday, The Guardian, which I was shocked that they went after Disney. The Guardian released the facts that to make Snow White for Disney, they burnt more fuel, caused more pollution than a London airport to make the film. To make one film. Yet, you'll have the same company who spends tens of millions of dollars telling you that it's a sin if you take one or two more vacations a year on a plane. Don't drive there. Try to carpool. Take a bicycle. Take a bus. But no, it's that hypocrisy which will always kill them in the end. You know what I think I find the funniest that no one really addresses is the woke. The people themselves who buy into this cult of crazy, they really believe it, right? If they spent 20 minutes reading history, they'd understand that every movement that started this way, especially when you go on talking about cultural Marxism or Mao's Red Revolution or Stalin's, the first people that they take out after they've achieved their goals, the communists with Stalin, is they line up all their original supporters because they know that the pile of bull that they've been served about a new utopia is not real. And those people would become the biggest rebels against the machine they helped build. So it's just interesting. It's the same way with Harry and Meghan. It's like this entire, I really love the way the UK has with the English language, like porcupines. What do they do? Harry, April was the 5th year anniversary of Brexit, right? He went on his freedom flight. Like he was leaving a war, going to build the life he says he was denied in America. And now what is he? He's holding an iPhone to film Meghan like he's a hostage negotiator. So she can do what? So she can post to her 104 real Instagram followers and her 2.6 million Mumbai bots. The reason people are like, why? No, she's being successful. I'm like, really? You can't see through that? All you ever have to do is add 1 + 1. Her Netflix show, With Love, Meghan, had the lowest rated YouTube trailers for Netflix ever. Her show lasted 6 days on the charts, according to the ratings, whether you're going to look at Nielsen's or you're going to look at Samba TV. And that's supposed to be the same marketing foundation that she sold out in under a half hour? Come on. It's like... really? You're talking about she's talking to people who need instructions on how to breathe. It's crap.
So I could only stomach two episodes of it. What were your thoughts as you were watching it?
Well, the biggest premiere of a character I've ever seen was Edible Flowers. I mean, it had more coverage than she did. It was just like, I didn't know, edible flowers and ice cubes on pancakes, on eggs and fried bacon. I'm surprised. I think I put it in one of my videos, Harry, the next time he spends a night over there, better keep one eye open or else he's going to wake up covered in flowers. I mean, it's at this point, it's actually I really don't know if it's ego, vanity, what's making him hold on to the marriage, or if it's for the children, because the environment from the outside looking into how they're being raised with the public information we have is a horrid situation. I mean, you're literally talking, this is a replay of Faye Dunaway's role as Joan Crawford in Mommy Dearest, when she tells the child, how could you ruin that for me? Did you know the press was there? I mean, that's what you see. Because look, for 5 years, have you seen the children? No. I don't ever talk about the kids because they're kids. When they're adults, that's fine. But all of a sudden, you start getting pictures daily, weekly of a back, of a leg, of a head. So it's like, okay. It just cements the fact that they're props. That's the fact that she doesn't get or refuses to accept or is a narcissist and doesn't care. It's the same way she's been caught in the last 3 weeks with when With Love, Megan came out. Where she, what did she say to Mindy Kaling? I was a latchkey kid and I grew up with fast food. We rewind to 2016 when she's, you know, judging a show where kids wanted to become a chef. And she's like, you know, I grew up with farm fresh California table food. Like, which is it? She tells the New York Times 4 days ago. Yeah. Whenever I don't have time and Harry's not here, you know, I feed the kids, you know, frozen food from the freezer, frozen chicken. It's like, pick a lane. Because she, see, that's the problem when you're a narcissist and it's on social media. She's acting like it's 1990 and the internet doesn't exist. That's one of her biggest problems. She's living her life or a lie in public. Well, there's a record of it. People can go, okay, you said X and then Y. If it happens one time, we're all human beings. We have a slip of the tongue. We make a mistake. But when it happens 122 times, you're like, wait. Come on. You want us to buy into this? Like, we're not lobotomized here.
I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest Is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Podsafe the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster is very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Podsafe the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
Your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit InsureKidsNow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
So did you read her reaction to the critical reviews? She was just playing the woke card and the race card as such. Do you think she's really that dim that she doesn't see how transparent she is and how fake she is? Or do you think there's just something, you know, she can't accept that in her brain, that she can't even act herself? Well, no, see through it.
I think she's an empty shell. I think she's one of those people who's an empty shell and will put on any mask at any moment to achieve whatever goal she has laid out. I think nothing else matters to her. Because anyone who has that level of self-reflection would have stopped a long time ago. They've been like, okay. I think it's like once, then I think in our first conversation that we ever had a while back now, you had asked me, would there ever be a way back for Megan and Harry? I said, absolutely. They could, even today, be the stars of the world. All they would have to do is self-reflect, take 3 months off, do one-hour interview with not a hand-picked puppet as a journalist, but somebody who's going to say, okay, you know, I know you're full of shit. Everybody knows you're hypocrites. And they would have to come out, you know what? You're right. We screwed people over. We bullied. We battered. We were full of it. Admit the truth. She could even turn around and say, it got to my head. It got to my head. I wanted to be a princess my whole life. I met this guy. I think I fell in love with him. Then I got wrapped up in the whole thing. And I thought, you know, I stopped thinking. If they actually told the truth, I mean, the bottom of the barrel, just right cut to the bone truth, the way the world works, most people would forgive them. And they'd be like, yeah. But they will never do that because they want the facade. This is why I think the Santabali scandal is going to blow up much bigger than it is now, especially because of that letter. Supposedly, Harry had written a letter to Dr. Sophie Chandaka. And by all accounts, from the Daily Mail to the Telegraph and the Independent, they're stating that what's reportedly in that letter is how he's talking down to her and degrading her, like, you know who I am? And when that gets released in discovery through the High Commission of Charities, that's it. Hollywood's dead to them, and I think the rest of the world will be at that point. They have almost nobody left. Think about it. Think about it, my friend. Netflix is the partner with Megan on As Ever. Their partner. Funding her product line. Have they spent a plug nickel on marketing, advertising, lining up celebrity endorsements? Not one. Not one. There should be, every time you go to Netflix, you should be seeing the marketing for it, As Ever. You know, look. Look who's pushing it. Look who's supporting it. I think they're just trying to fulfill the terms of their contract and get the hell out of there. But I also believe they're holding out, waiting for a divorce to happen because they're going to be like, how much do you want? We want to film it. Yeah.
Do you think they're operating on the assumption that the royal family is perennially monetizable? Even if you're a dimwit, you can just keep feeding out that trough.
Yeah, I do. And that's where, again, I don't think ill is the right word. King Charles is ill, so I don't want to say what I really feel because I don't like to speak ill of people who are suffering through cancer. But he is allowing them to use their titles to make money, like a credit card. That is not a good look. I don't know how it feels to be a citizen of the United Kingdom, but if I were a citizen there, I would be furious. I'm paying for someone to pay for someone else to make money off of what I paid for? Like, seriously? Yeah. I don't think that can continue, and I don't think Prince William will allow that to happen.
All right, we've got about 20 minutes left with George. Please keep the questions coming. Don't forget to subscribe to his channel and watch his video about the death of woke. All the links are in the description. So, Sophie wants to know, do you think Harry is regretting his decision to marry Meghan and leave his life in the UK yet?
Since I can't be in his mind, I can only judge by his actions. We've seen over the course of the last 6 months, he spent more time away from her than with her. That's by their own admissions of what they called their professional separation so they can do their own projects. Now, he's holding her camera as a stagehand. What that's for, you're going to have to determine that, but I was once in his position with someone I was with. And I can tell you from my own experience that I regretted it. It was trying to debate, can I fix this? Can it be healed? Can it work through? Can I see a way to the other side? But I was also really young and didn't know anything about life. He's not at that age that I was. So if he has any type of, if he has any moment where he's circumspect, or looks on his life, I would almost guarantee that he regrets this because he's got to weigh it versus everything that he had versus everything he lost. And I'm not talking about money. I'm talking about relationships. He gave up everything for one person who abuses him. When you look at the way they interact on a public scale. So I would say yes. I would say he regrets it.
Question. Well, just a comment from JR. Let's get your thoughts on this. William might grant them absolution to return to royal life, but Charles never will. The people will never forgive the race-baiting antics and wokeness.
Yeah, I don't. The people will never forgive it. I completely understand that, and I wholeheartedly agree. I don't know. I have an odd feeling that Prince William, one day when he's the king, I just have a feeling based on his actions that he is going to draw a much harder line. I could be wrong, but I just don't think he's going to put up with any of this nonsense.
Which leads to the question from Lisa. Do you think that William will strip them of their titles?
See, I think he's going to put them in abeyance. I've been reading how those things work. I think he'll put them in abeyance. Strip them, I think he would probably give them a warning. You either have to drop all this nonsense or these are going to go.
So Meow wants to know whether you think that Harry was sucked into a narcissist's whirlpool.
I think initially, no. I think initially he found someone who could help him realize the hatred he has for his own family and his position as spare. I think he found a murder weapon in a soulmate. I'm going to use that term loosely, in a soulmate who could help him destroy his family. That's what I think. And then from there, it just went downhill like an avalanche. It just snowballed. And then he got sucked into it. I think in the beginning, he's like, wow, I found somebody my family is going to hate, which means I love. We've seen that before in life. Otherwise it would have ended up as a true fairy tale. You'd have the everyday girl who meets a prince, who falls in love, they get married and live happily ever after with the regular problems we all do. But the path that they have taken, he's now a cameraman, a prince of the realm. It's now like hawking jam and dog biscuits. That's what I mean. Like, think of where he's, how far he has fallen. As a human being, that must at some point hit him. Otherwise, he's an automaton, you know, a half-wit. Nothing's there.
Janae is asking, do you think As Ever will fail as a brand?
Well, I think it's already failed. Again, if you look at the Netflix numbers, they only have X amount of base. Let's say, based on the ratings, they have 1 million people across the planet who absolutely love them and will buy everything from them. Well, A, we're not in that type of economy. Her product's too expensive. And as reviews have come out, because I refuse to buy anything, I'm not going to be one of those people, because I've seen way too many YouTubers who are like, grab, you know, buying the stuff and then doing them. Like, I'm not marketing for Megan's Mirage. But if you just base it on how many people support her, not the fake people, her numbers with Netflix, her ratings, the trailer numbers, she has a base. That's it. It's a fixed number. That can only go so long. Every business has to survive. It has to grow. Because the first thing that happens is attrition rate. How many people buy something and then regret it? And how many people come back? You have to keep growing. If your attrition rate is higher than your growth, you're done. So I think you're going to have a lot of people in the beginning who are going to be like, yes, I fully support her. I don't care what she does. I think the world has been bad to her. You're going to have that group. Then you're going to have the group who's just curious. Oh, it's a new product. I buy every new product under the sun, those type of people. Then you're going to have people who are like, well, I like all this home lifestyle stuff, and I'm going to buy into that. But already she's had to issue an apology letter in the last 24 hours. People paid for a product that they didn't receive. The jam has come out and is already being ridiculed that it's not only not a jam, it's not a preserve. It's like runny like water. They're like, you can't put it on toast. You can't do anything except drink it. So you're paying, what was it, $14 for a 7-ounce jar of juice that you can get 7 tablespoons at. Like, they're nonsensical. This is why it's delusional. So no, I don't think. I think once Netflix cuts her contract, that's when the whole jig is up. And there was a report a week ago that I was just working on a video where Netflix is stating that after the Santabali scandal, their contract is supposed to be renewed this year, that they're not going to do it.
I think your true feeling came out in a Freudian slip back then.
Yeah, oh. I must have missed it. Oh, I see. I know. I was trying to say another word.
did any of the viewers catch that one?
I hope not. That was accidental.
Someone's going to put it out of the clip. Sophie's asking, do you think he had good reason to leave his family, as the royal family is being revealed as very corrupt itself?
No. The reason I'll say it is every family has trouble. I don't care who you are. Every family. Oh, my God. I've had family troubles with people that I love and couldn't stand, but I've always measured that real love, unconditional love, is shown in the exact moment. I don't care if it's your wife, your husband, your mother, your brother, your father, whoever it is, your best friend. In the exact moment when you despise the person the most and they need you, because that's where you put aside your anger, your animosity, and you go, I'm there for you. We can solve this other stuff later. But Megan showed her true hand when her father makes, whether you want to call it a mistake, a bad choice, he was set up, let's call it a hypothetical mistake. A human being who was there for her from the beginning, sacrificed everything, gave her everything, makes one possibly bad decision. And for that, she X's him out. It's the same with Harry. He grew up with people who made some bad decisions, but it's still your blood. To me, blood, your family, it's your bond. You go, you work it out. I don't believe all this BS. They didn't want to talk, really. He showed his cards by airing dirty laundry for dollars. Once you do that, you show your character. That's where I would use the word that I didn't mean to use.
Quicksilver wants to know if you think he blames Charles for Diana's death.
I'm sure he does. Just based on his rationale, and when you heard him when he did the therapy with that one doctor, and when he spoke on that other show that he did with Oprah, All About Me or something, his words always intimate that, she was taken from him. Who's to blame for this? He really would love to investigate it. It always points back at that direction. No son or child is going to be happy when their dad divorces because they were with someone else. They're not going to like that situation. They're just not going to like it. No matter how happy they are.
JR's wondering about your thoughts on possible resentment because he's not first in line to the throne.
I think so. He said it. I think, again, it was the Daily Mail who quoted him, and he said it multiple times. When it wasn't the nanny, I think it was. It either came from the chef or footman or butler. I'm trying to remember specifically, but it was all about the sausages. How he would complain, why does Prince William have two and I have only one? It's like, why don't you just ask for an extra one, dude? It's like, but again, it's the same reason he's in court today, right? He wants the security back. He wants the ability to be able to pay for armed police protection. Why? He doesn't need it. When he's gone over there and he's required it, they provide it for him. When he doesn't, they don't. Because he's not a full-time member as a working royal. But that's ego. He wants the entourage back. He wants to puff up his chest and go, Megan, see, I got him. It's like, look at me. I'm just like my brother. Yeah, no. That's why all the telltale signs, this is all an ego trip.
Right, we've got 10 minutes left with George the Giant Slayer, folks. Get your final questions in. And don't forget to subscribe to his channel. All links are in the description box for his channel and all of the socials. So, Mike, when are the Brits going to get tired of this silly monarch royal family farce?
I love the monarchy. You're asking the wrong guy. I love the monarchy. I was raised with it in my family. As I told you, in our first or second interview when we were talking, my grandmother hid British soldiers during World War II. And that's what, and a communist ended up turning her in the village where she was taken by the Nazis and sent to Auschwitz as a spy. So we grew up with a very deep and abiding love for Queen Elizabeth and the monarchy.
Yeah, and there was always the charts of the popularity of the individual royals, and QE2 was always very high in that. And I think it took a hit with Prince Andrew and Epstein. The royal family, the way it was viewed in this country. And then, of course, when Queen Elizabeth passed, it took a hit. And you got the Nostradamus prediction, which still has a possibility of playing out. And I thought, if they give it to William, don't leave William waiting for too long. If they give it to William, that would give it a good boost. What's your thoughts on that?
Oh, 100%. And I think that's not only because of William. I think that's because of Princess Catherine. I mean, see, again, character. She shows every time she goes out that she truly cares. You feel it. I mean, even through video, through listening to her, this is a true lady, someone with a genuine heart who has real love for people. That's, again, now we go, when the circle comes back to Meghan. Her With Love, Megan episode, the very first one. She's like, talking with a guy who looks like John Lennon's ghost, who's doing the beekeeping. And she's like, I hate bees. I'm afraid of bees. But then she's doing it like, I wonder why. Who could have possibly had an apiary and taken care of bees? Oh, wow. It was Princess Catherine's been doing this for years. And her photos. You notice if you wait about 3 to 6 months after news breaks of Princess Catherine doing something, Megan will follow suit. Now, all of a sudden, she had her first podcast today for Confessions of a Female Grifter and or Female Founder, whatever the hell she's calling it. And she shared that she had postpartum eclampsia. Out of the blue, she's like, do you know when I was having my baby, you know, I was going to suffer from this? I'm like, okay, so the king has cancer. Princess Catherine has survived cancer. So now here comes, I got to throw my hat into the ring too, that I had something. And what's odd is I've had a family member who had that. It's not something you discuss openly. It's a very sensitive subject. But to throw that out there, again, PR stunt. I think, again, that's why they constantly have to rebrand themselves. They keep getting busted playing the same grievance gospel.
Yeah, so we interviewed an ex-female prisoner called Fran. And when she was incarcerated, Kate mentored her. And I had no idea she was even helping people in prisons like that. You know, it's never been publicly revealed as far as I'm aware. And Kate really inspired Fran to turn her life around. And that right there, to me, you know, she's not putting it out that she's doing this. She's doing it behind the scenes and helping people who are really struggling, people in prison who are really struggling. So that's such a testament to her character.
It is. You know, you just hit on something. There's a passage in the Bible. I'm paraphrasing. I can't quote it verbatim. But again, it was something that I was raised with by from my mom. It was about when you want to help somebody, or you want to help in any way, you keep it anonymous because it's about helping them. It's not about getting accolades or headlines. When the Megans went to the California wildfires, look at all the blowback they got, because it's like you wanted to help. You know how the public views you. You know that this would happen. If you truly cared about people, you'd be quiet. You'd do it through a second or a third intermediary. So there's no way to trace it back to you, because if the goal is about helping, or when they went to Uvalde after the shooting, if you really cared about those people, send a check anonymously, set up a charity where nobody knows it, but then they wouldn't get the coverage. And that's how they get exposed.
Exactly. And I've got a few people asking about this podcast. It's called Female Gangster. Finds love, and Kate Middleton in women's prison. It's I think it's 2 hours long. I'll put it in the live chat, and I'll put it in the description box as well if you're watching this on replay. And she gets into everything that how Kate Middleton helped, how she met her. It's a really fascinating and uplifting story. All right, we're down to our last 5 minutes, folks. So get your final questions in for George. And let's see, there's a few pending here. Do you think Hollywood knows what the royal family had possibly gone through with Meghan Markle during her time in the UK? I think the whole world knows, don't they?
If they didn't, they do now. Because, well, I mean, look at it. In the last 12 months, you had Deadline, Forbes, Variety, Vanity Fair, and The Hollywood Reporter in one form, fashion, another say, the door is shut. The doors closed. The pathway is finished. I mean, Variety let out, you know, that Vanity Fair, the Bible of Hollywood, let out that damning report right before the release of her series, showing the fact that she was a bully, that she bullied her employees, that she bullied everybody around her, that she was a dictator in high heels. I mean, everything, that they're grifters, cons, nobody in basically Montecito likes them. And they have about the same five friends that they use. So, yeah, I think everybody knows in Hollywood. That's why you don't see. Otherwise, again, where are all the people she invited to? Where are the Clooney's going, oh, my God, I just tried this delicious honey pot, which even Harry doesn't want to touch.
No. Nikki's asking whether you think Harry is entitled to the royal security that the other family members get.
No. He made his choice. Got to live with it. Pay for it if you want it. Get it on your own. He has bodyguards. I just don't believe it. And I think he purposely in his book, You can tell his strategy was to leak how many people he killed. Remember, soldiers don't talk about that, how many people they killed during a war. But he did. And then he used the very fact that he announced it, that you had jihadis around the world saying they wanted to whack him, as the justification to get security. Again, it just takes just basic addition. 1 + 1 = 2. Harry states, look, these are all the people I killed. The people who are related to them go, we're going to get you. Hey, I need security. No, I don't think he needs security. I think he needs to shut his mouth and go live on a private island somewhere. Go and relive your life.
Yeah, I remember hearing all that boasting in his audiobook. All right, George, huge thank you for coming on, my friend. It's always a great pleasure. You've just got one of those voices that it's so relaxing and a delight to listen to, a real broadcaster voice. Can you let the viewers know what they can look forward to on your channel in the coming week?
Absolutely. I have a Snow White video, which I just released the other day. It's pretty much about the whole Disney debacle and Meghan Markle's twin sister, which I call Rachel Ziegler, and how she destroyed a legendary piece of film, plus everybody else involved in it. And I'm currently now working on a new Meghan and Harry video, which should be out Friday or this Sunday.
Brilliant. All right. Good luck with all that, my friend. I'm going to let you go and I'll close the show. Take care.
Thank you. Great to see you.
Cheers. You too. What a fantastic guest, folks. And we've got another one coming in. Lionel, ex-prosecutor, is going to be breaking down the Russell Brand allegations and give us his thoughts on that case. So I know we did, I don't know if you guys saw the panel that we did earlier. We must have had about 8 different guests across the 2 hours on the Russell Brand panel. And I'm thinking that was quite an interesting format, all of the different interaction. Steeples was really going at it. Anyway, put a 1 in the chat if you would like to see us do a weekly panel like we did earlier today with a variety of guests on, you know, whatever is the big topic of the week. Put a 2 in the chat if you would rather we didn't do a weekly panel. I can see lots of ones coming in. I really do appreciate that. So I'm gonna propose that to the team. And let's go with it. All right, so this video is going to end, and we are going to go over to Lionel, and he's going to be taking your questions and breaking down the allegations against Russell Brand. So this video will take you over there. If it doesn't, click on the channel.
I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest is Politics.
Anish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest is Politics.
Anish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.